It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast, presented by BetMGM and McKenny Hockey. I'm Mike Stevens. This is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan, how are you doing?
I am doing pretty well. Got a lot of hockey coming up, a lot of big events. It's a very fun time of year.
Very, very fun time of year. It's a fun time of year kind of in Buffalo, not so much for the, I would say, the playoff push, but there's a lot of fun. You know, the vibes are great. We talked about vibes.
They're not dead yet.
They're not dead yet. I mean,
like, mathematically.
Yeah.
Still in it.
That's true. Although, you know, my feelings about math are widely known. I got like I got a 51% in grade 11, and then I dropped it. So that's cool. Same with French in grade 9, except that was applied French. Anyway, Buffalo, though, they're debuting a lot of their fun, or not debuting really, but they have, like, the vibes are great. We talked about the vibes in Philadelphia last week and how, you know, they're seemingly turning up, but, like, we'll see in Buffalo. Like, this is a team that knows how to have fun. Have you seen those Jeff Skinner?
I did watch a bit of that one yesterday,
Like, legitimately, that guy is going to have a future. Like, his comedic timing is amazing, and everyone's having fun.
Yeah.
And then they're debuting a bunch of their young guys, starting with Devin Levi, who had an amazing debut.
Yeah.
I believe he stopped, 33 shots or 32 shots? OT win. It was great. So then we talk about how, you know, Buffalo, they got a great blue line. They have some great offense. Goaltending has always been the big sort of question mark with this new era of Sabres. You know, it led to us thinking, what does the Sabres grease look like next year?
Yeah, so this is a fascinating question for me because, you know, Devin Levi just starting off his pro career, obviously.
And he's short. And you hate him because of that.
I don't hate him. I'm just skeptical about playoff success.
Mm-hmm.
But that's neither here nor there right now because...
You heard it here, folks. You heard it here folks. Ryan Kennedy. Yeah, continue. Yeah.
So, you know, down the stretch, it'd be great to see him get another start or two. But again, this is a guy that's just starting his pro career, you know, coming in from Northeastern in the NCAA. So when I look at the Sabres next year, obviously they want to be a playoff team.
Yeah.
And they have, as you mentioned, a lot of weapons that'll help them get there. You know, Tage Thompson, legit star right now. You know, they've got the veteran scoring. They've guys like Owen Power and Rasmus Dahlin on the back end. They're dynamic and, you know, can get the minutes and are still young and coming into their prime. But goaltending is kind of interesting because, yes, they do have Eric Comrie under contract for one more season, but that doesn't seem to be working out for them.
It is not.
So what I'm thinking is the best case scenario, because Ukko-Pekka Luokkanen, who is 6'5", he's further ahead than Devin Levi, obviously, at this point. He has more pro experience. But, you know, is he ready to be the number one? Not really sure.
No.
Devin Levi, the most important thing for him in the next calendar year is to get reps.
Yes.
Maybe that's in Buffalo, but probably it's in Rochester in the American League for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally fine. That's what you want in a goalie. You know, you don't expect a goalie to be, ready for heavy duty until they're like 23, 24 anyways.
Yes.
So there are exceptions.
I mean, yeah, you're going to get the Spencer Knights, the Carter Harts, the
guys
like that.
Yeah, your Jake Ottingers. Yeah. So what I would like to see, I think, for Buffalo is to spend a little bit of cash on a short-term free agent. And there are some interesting options for them. Semyon Varlamov, for example. You know, he realizes he is not the future in New York because Ilya Sorokin is...
Impressive self-awareness by Semyon Varlamov
But having said that, he's been a very good veteran for the Islanders, very important for them in bringing Sorokin along. So, you know, if you're Varlamov and you want maybe, you know, who knows how much longer he'll be in the NHL, but if I'm Buffalo, I'd try to offer him a one-year contract at maybe $5 or $6 million and be like, look, you know, we want you to get in about 35 games with Luokin in and maybe a bit of Levi as the other ones. Same can be said for Frederik Andersen, UFA this summer. You know, Carolina obviously in their window right now, and whatever happens, you know, in this spring slash summer, I mean, if the Canes win the Stanley Cup, then to me, sort of all bets are off, you know, because it's like you got your ring, then you got to just do best what's for the franchise. I also wonder, and, you know, he's a little bit younger. I wonder if they could convince Aiden Hill to come over. Now, that would be one where maybe you sign him up for 2 or 3 years and you just decide that you're going to have a battery of him and Luokin and perhaps, you know, Levi. In the future, but I mean, he's having a great year for Vegas.
Yes, and 914 save percentage, 27.
Yeah, games, and if you look at Vegas, you know, I mean, they have Logan Thompson, and you know, right now they have Jonathan Quick.
But they have Patera.
Patera's looked really good this year. Yeah, he's looked good. So I mean,
screwed me in fantasy one. The guy got him on a spot start. Patera, like, who's gonna do that? And it just, you know, so I'm very well aware of how good Patera's been this
year.
There
you go. Yeah. So I mean, Vegas might not have room to retain Aiden Hill. And he would be he would probably have a number of suitors this summer. So maybe Buffalo gets outgunned on that one because you don't want to overspend, obviously, on this position. But I think it's gonna be very intriguing to see what GM Kevin Adams does over the summer in terms of goaltending.
Now, 100%. I mean, I think that... First of all, our producer, Connor, gave me a little note here saying that potentially Robin Leonard in Vegas, you know, if he comes back.
Going back to Buffalo.
Yes.
Now, that would be interesting.
That would be... I'm not sure if... I mean, it's a totally... other than maybe the owners, it's a totally new management regime in there, you'd think.
Like,
it's... You know, and if anyone can get the best out of someone, I think it's Don Granato. Sure. I think UPK, that's it. That's
UPL.
UPL. Sorry. Jeez. He has like 5 K's in his last name, so it just made me UPL. I think is obviously like entrenched there. Like he has to be playing full time in the NHL next year. He's got to start there because he did. Yo-yo back and forth there for a little bit this year. The Sabres, they have a decent chunk of cap coming on. Like they have some big extensions that are going to be kicking in. Like, you know, like Tage Thompson is going to start making over seven.
Yeah.
Dylan Cousins is going to be starting making over seven, and Matias Samuelsson is going to start making 4.285. But other than that, like their lineup doesn't really change that much. They're only really losing. I mean, Kyle Okpozo is their captain. But he's not going to command a whole ton of stuff. Like it's interesting. I think your idea of signing sort of like a stopgap is a really good idea. And Frederik Andersen is tough because he has looked really good in Carolina at times. But then again, we look at all the goalies who have looked very good in Carolina at times and gone elsewhere because that defensive structure is amazing.
It is.
And also he has never been able to be relied on health-wise lately. Like at least in Carolina.
Yeah.
Like last year. He looked like he was in the Vezina conversation most of the year.
True.
Then got hurt in the playoffs. And that was, like, Kochetkov stepped in, Ranta stepped in, but that was arguably their downfall, you know? And then even this year, he's only played 31 games. He's been hurt as well.
Yeah.
And he's a year older. He'll be 32, which is 2 years past that age 30 where goalies start to decline.
Mm.
I don't know if I'd really take a gamble on Frederik Andersen, but there are a couple here. I mean, you know, like, who knows? Maybe Jonathan Quick, you know? Like, he's a free agent. John Bernier is up, but Cam Talbot, you know, he's a veteran guy. He struggled a bit this year, but I think he was hurt, and I think also like I just don't think he was in a great mental headspace because he really didn't like getting traded or he really didn't like the situation in Minnesota. We heard all about that. But there are a couple others like, you know, like legitimately even Tristan Jarry is coming up. He's a UFA. Mackenzie Blackwood's an RFA, but we'll see. Like he's struggled, but potentially maybe, you know, he's a younger guy who could be sort of a diet Ilya Samsonov. And like, you know, he needs to get that sort of motivation. There are a lot of really good sort of options. Even Antti Raanta, who we just mentioned, like he's had better numbers than Andersen. Yes, there's been the health issues too, but like, I think you're right. Levi likely will need some seasoning in the AHL. I mean, this is just to show him, like, hey, you can hang here, and then we're going to sort of develop. But like they, what they do need to do is they need to get a legitimate, like, Craig Anderson's been a great story.
Yes.
But everyone, but like, I don't think you can hinge what is hoping to be that next step in contention on a guy who will be, what, 42, 43 yeah. next year.
Plus Craig Anderson, even when he was playing his best NHL hockey, he had this weird thing where he would go good year, bad year,
yes.
good year, bad year. And I would consider this a good year. So next year so must be a bad
year. It'll be the downfall. Yeah. And then, but they need to get like a legitimate guy who can be relied on, because I think, because we've seen what their goalie situation has been like. I remember during the COVID season having to write the news hits about their guys entering either protocols or injury. And right. it was like they had to sign Michael Hauser to be their backup and start. So yeah, I think
they need a safety blanket.
Yes. You go after a guy like Cam Talbot, go after a guy, if you want to go a bit younger, maybe a couple extra years on that to really make it an interest. Like if you're really thinking, okay, Levi needs to spend like next year and the year after, maybe give Tristan Jarry 3 years, see how he goes, because he's been very good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of options there, but they do need, I do think you need to make UPL, who has been your guy, you've developed him. The last time you took a goal, you drafted a goalie, you developed him, you put all these resources in, he didn't really work out early, and then you let him walk. He's likely going to win the Vezina this year.
Yeah.
So I don't think they want to repeat that. So yeah. it would be interesting. Another team that you know, it seems to be the vibes are doing great is Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
We're a pro after a just completely, like, in my opinion, their first season, like their debut season last year, was like the worst first season you can have, in that like they were bad, but they were also just like so, you know, as the kids say, mid. Like
right,
they were just
very nondescript.
There was nothing special about that team.
Yeah.
Nothing interesting. Nothing to make me watch a Seattle Kraken game.
Yes.
This year it's been different, and we'll get into a larger conversation in a second here. But like they've secured it looks like it's going to be their first playoff berth ever. It's mm-hmm. great. It's a great story that I don't think anyone really thought of in the offseason that they were going to be able to do this. How are you feeling about the Kraken's chances? Because you get in, and anything can happen.
Yes.
But now we're like, okay, how can they make any noise?
Yeah, so I think it's going to be difficult just looking at their stats. Like, they're a pretty good possession team. Mm-hmm. They're a top 10 offensive team. But then when it comes to, like, special teams and defense, they're just kind of middle of the pack.
Yeah.
And typically in the playoffs, if you want to be a real contender, you want to be top 10 in most of those categories.
Mm-hmm.
They give up a lot of high danger goals, and their goaltending in general hasn't been
very
great.
Bad. No,
yeah,
I have the stats in front of me.
Both are sub .900. Both their stars are sub .900.
It's bad. Like I have their if one of these tabs has them. I have their goalie because I knew we were going to talk about this.
Yeah.
Martin Jones is an .886, and he started far and away the most games.
Yeah,
Philip Grubauer is an .890, and then Joey Decord, who's a career backup or AHLer, he started three, and he's only a .903.
Yeah,
that's a legitimate hurdle.
Yeah, so they got some problems there. I mean, it's interesting to see how far they've come. Actually, the NHL just released a stat today that said they've now either tied or broken a record for best jump from first year to second year in terms of points in the standings. The California Golden Seals, or they might have been the Oakland Seals at the time, they used to hold that record.
Mm-hmm.
So great jump, and it's kind of cool to see sort of the reclamation projects that have worked out for them. Daniel Sprong, Ailey Tolvanen, like they're getting contributions from those guys this year. And then obviously, Jared McCann was good for them last year, but it's like, he has an outside shot at 40 goals.
Oh, he's got 37 right now.
Yeah, yeah. And
still,
they play Arizona again.
Yeah, there's still a couple games left on schedule.
Vince Dunn is leading,
Their team, yeah.
And I know we'll get into the Norris conversation later, but Vince Dunn has like better 5-on-5 numbers than Erik Karlsson in terms of goals for, goals against.
Now, why would you say something so controversial yet so brave?
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie foreshadowing over here. So, I mean, they're an interesting team, but I just, they're going to be a wild card team,
yes.
which means they're probably going to play either Vegas or, and again, we're going to talk about this in a little bit, Colorado or Dallas or Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I don't love their chances, but it is nice then to see them make that leap to give Seattle fans at least two postseason games. And then you look at the future, and Matty Beniers is obviously the guy that's going to lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice, but I don't see them as like a legitimate threat right now, just based on I mean, anything can happen, but not everything does.
You know, I obviously have a soft spot for Seattle. I mean, you know, any, you know, you go back into a, you go into in, into a new market, and you want to succeed for the good of the sport. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I will be low key, sort of like having a soft spot in my heart for them. You know, however long their playoff hopes last, and I hope that this segment is included in there. You know, their Stanley Cup winning montage of, you know, everyone doubted us.
Bulletin board material.
But they are not going to do very well in the playoffs. Like, it is, it's been a fun ride, and they have some great, not just some great, they have an incredible base to build upon.
Yes.
Like, you have Matty Beniers and Shane Wright just there. Matty Beniers has already proven he can do it. He's likely going to win the Calder. Yeah. And Shane Wright is coming up. He's dominating the, you know, he dominated the World Junior. Well, not dominated, but he played very, very well at the World Juniors. Yeah. He's dominating Major Junior right now. Seems like you rushed him into it, but he's ready to make the leap, I think, next year. But yeah, the goaltending's the biggest issue. Like, you at this point, you're likely riding into the playoffs with Martin Jones as your starter. And, I mean, that you just can't do that. Yeah. He's an 886. That's just not, that's unplayable. And then Phil Grubauer has had, the fact that they're able to do this, given how much cap and, like, expectation they sort of had when building their team in putting in Eric Grubauer, it's like kudos to them. Like, they were able to do this because they are paying Grubauer basically $6 million a year on a long-term contract to be their franchise goaltender. He was nominated for the Vezina the right before they signed him.
Yeah.
And he's been a below 900 goaltender ever since. He's been one of the worst 5-on-5 goaltenders in the league.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they're, you know, careening towards their first playoff berth is amazing. But then I also look at the lineup and, yeah, like, I am over the moon that Daniel Sprong is has put it together. I always liked him. I watched
Amsterdam's finest.
I watched him a lot in the AHL when I was covering the Marlies. He would come to town a little bit, but just like actually watching stuff. So and I always liked his game. I just kind of need to stick somewhere, and he has clearly. But like, and obviously no disrespect to Vince Dunn, but if Vince Dunn is leading your team in scoring, you have some high-end talent issues. You
it
know?
Should be a forward.
It should be a forward. And look, Jared McCann potentially being a 40-goal man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
He's the first guy to ever sign a contract extension in their franchise, and he and it is the fact that it has worked out so well. Mm-hmm. I think that's great, just like for the culture.
Sure.
But you don't have any high-end talent. Like, you really don't. Like that's high octane. Like, Matty Beniers is absolutely a high-end talent.
Totally,
he will be. He will make this conversation null and void in a year or two.
Yes.
But at this moment, you don't have anyone who's scoring above 65 points in a season when scoring is being the highest it's been in the modern era.
Yes.
That's going to be tough. And
yeah, it just occurred to me Connor McDavid has more than twice as many points as their leading scorer.
Yeah, and you know, like, he had an outside shot at like double the amount of goals
that
the Jared McCann was gonna has scored. So it, like, those are the things that are holding them back. But then I look at who they're gonna match up against. I think they'll get decimated by Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you saw, but everyone who's injured on Colorado is traveling on their most recent. So like, they're coming.
Yeah.
Like Landeskog, Girard, like all of their good players are ready to come back, it seems. And so they're going to get steamrolled if Colorado ends up actually winning the division there. And I think Dallas will also, you know, have an easy time just based on the fact that they're edging goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if they run into Vegas, that'll be very interesting.
Okay.
Because, A, I think Vegas has some of the goaltending sort of question marks that Seattle does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now, we don't know when Logan Thompson will be back. If Logan Thompson's back, that's great. But then again, that would be a Logan Thompson who's played half of a game in, what is it, like 4 months at this point?
Mm.
Or it'll be a geriatric Jonathan Quick.
How dare you slander Jonathan
Look,
Quick.
Who is being fueled by spite, which
is... I was going to say, he feeds off your hatred.
Yeah, and that is how... And as someone who, you know, that's the only thing that gets me out of bed in the morning is pure spite to get back at my haters. I totally respect that. And Aiden Hill, who's been great, but, like, it's Aiden Hill. Like, are you going to... So I think if they run to Vegas, there's a chance. I think there's a chance they can at least make it interesting.
Sure.
But Dallas or Colorado, they just kind of have them beat at like every positional group that I just don't see it. But Vegas will be interesting. Vegas is
all expansion.
All expansion. And like two of the markets who have done the best, like the two newest markets who are two of the most like fervent, like, you know, they've done the best in sort of building it. That'll be a fun atmosphere.
Yes.
And I think it'll be a fun on ice product because I think that they can give them a run for the money, but then we'll see. You teased it before. Mm-hmm. Trophy watch. Yes. It is pretty much, we were talking about before how some places have just kind of taken odds off the board for certain awards because they're all sewn up, you know. Mm. You know, there is a vocal Ilya Sorokin push for the Vezina that I would actually kind of agree on. But, you know, like McDavid's going to win the Hart. You know, he's already got the Art Ross locked up. You know, he had that locked up, you know, in like November, basically. Right. You know, there's... he's got the Rocket locked up as well. Like, there's
Veneers probably wins the Calder.
Yeah, it's tough to, like, Logan Thompson was going to make it tough, but then he got hurt for the entire second half.
Yeah.
But the award that is going to be the most difficult, and it is going to produce the most faux Twitter outrage, I believe.
Yes.
Is the Norris.
Yes.
Because there are like six people who could potentially win that that trophy. Ryan, let's discuss, because some people think that Erik Karlsson and his 100 point pace, basically. Mm-hmm. Could have a potential to win the Norris, and I think that's a great conversation to have. I think he will absolutely be nominated, and the fact that Erik Karlsson is back and scoring like an elite top line forward as a defenseman is pretty remarkable.
Definitely.
But this is the best defenseman.
Yeah, and that's where I get a little stuck, because if you look at Erik Karlsson's goals for and goals against, yes, he has a putting up a ton of goals and offense, but he's also letting in a ton on his own end. And, you know, the Sharks are one of the basement teams, so that's kind of expected. And, you know, he is a great breakout player in terms of breaking the puck out of his own zone. You know, it is awesome that he's back. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, you got to keep some of the pucks out of your own.
Yes.
And
you are a defenseman. You have to defend.
You are a defenseman. You got to defend at some point. So... I mean, I'm sure I'll have him, you know, on my ballot, but for me, I'm looking at guys like Adam Fox or Charlie McAvoy. Even, it's kind of funny, like, I say McAvoy, but it's like, well, it could be Hampus Lindholm as well. You know, like, some of the numbers that the Bruins defensemen are putting up are just zany. Like, mm-hmm. Matt Grzelcyk having an incredible year as well. So, like, you know, Makar has missed some time. But his numbers are still really good, and he is Cale Makar. So for me, it's probably right now either Fox or McAvoy that I would have number one, just in terms of what they've been able to accomplish. Their numbers are very good. They're not giving up a ton of goals compared to Karlsson.
Yeah.
So I think it's still a conversation. I don't, you know, some people are saying like, oh, Karlsson's got it wrapped up. It's like, I'm not so sure about that.
Oh, no, he definitely doesn't have it wrapped up. At least he shouldn't. You know, like, he might on vote, and that's fine, but, like, he at least shouldn't, because I look at, like, we're living in a golden age of top defensemen, I think. Like,
we certainly are.
Almost all of them are young, too, like, that we're looking at. You know, Erik Karlsson's kind of the exception to the rule here. Like, he's...
Yeah, I mean, Brett Burns is playing really well, too, so he's an older guy, but...
But I mean, I'm looking at, like, I'm just looking at pure points here. Like, Quinn Hughes is over a point per game. He's got 66 assists this year. You know, like, it's, he's not on my ballot, obviously. Like, because, again, it's the Erik Karlsson. You got to keep some pucks out of your net. But there's only, maybe, I said there's like six guys like who could win it. I think, like, Karlsson, Josh Morrissey, Dougie Hamilton, Miro Heiskanen, who no one's talking about.
Yeah.
The guy's got 71 points and is putting up, 68 points, putting up incredible 5-on-5 numbers. Exactly. He is, like, I keep saying this, he's the most underrated player in the league. Like,
I think that's fair.
Like, no one is talking about him.
Yeah.
And he's one of the best, if not the best, and I would have him on my ballot, like, straight up. We got Karlsson, Morrissey, Dougie Hamilton, Miro Heiskanen, Adam Fox, and then, you know, Cale Makar hasn't, I don't think, played enough games. He's only played 60, but even still, 66 points, doing all the things he can. And then you even get more into the weeds. Like, Brandon Montour has been fantastic this year. The Arrogant Ekblad has kind of had an off year, whereas Brandon Montour has elevated and, like, sort of kept that blue line together.
Yeah.
If you'd put a gun to my head, I would say Fox. I think he does. I think in this group, like, because we're taking Makar out of the equation, he hasn't played enough games.
Right.
If we're going by, like, the NBA, because they just put in a 65 games, you have to play 65 games to be eligible for an award. So it kind of takes away, like, load management and whatnot.
Sure.
But unfortunately, Makar is eliminated from that. Otherwise, he would be my pick. But, like, Adam Fox and Miro Heiskanen should be going head to head, and I think. There's a slight sort of, there's a, I think a little bit of a slight sort of a, edged Adam Fox just because he's able to do everything that you know we've I prayed at the altar of Cale Makar for, you know,
right.
Like where he's able to move the puck so well. He's an yeah. offensive fiend. He's good at, you know, in transition. Also, he's very, very good in his own end. Like, he's developed into an incredible hockey player.
Yeah.
Carlson's there, but honestly, on my ballot, I think he's third.
Yeah.
Like, I think it goes Fox, Heiskanen, and Carlson, at least in my ballot. And then Josh Morrissey kind of holding up the fort because if we're going by heart rules, I mean, where would Winnipeg be without him? So.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I think, like, I think the argument that Erik Karlsson is, you know, he's locked it up.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Bullpucky, in my opinion. I think.
Fair.
All right, moving on. We got, we just did just a trophy watch. Speaking of sort of Western Conference vibe we got here, we teased it earlier, the Central Division.
Mm-hmm.
There is a fight for, we've talked about the fight for the wild card spots. There's a fight for the top.
Yeah.
And that is exciting, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of funny too, because you have Colorado, Dallas, and Minnesota, and I mean, they are all neck and neck. But it's like two of those teams are going to have to play each other. So the motivation to finish first is even greater than usual because, like, you know, do you want to play the defending champs in Colorado who, as you pointed out, are getting healthy? And obviously when it comes to the playoffs, they have a formula that they know works very well. You have Dallas where you have all these incredible high-end guys at different positions. So you got, as you said, Heiskanen on D, you got Ottinger in net, you got Jason Robertson up front, not to mention a very good cast surrounding him, whether it's Pavelski and Sagan and Ben and Hintz, like, you know, just a lot of weapons there. Mm-hmm. And then you have Minnesota, where, you know, I mean, Matt Boldy just hit 30 goals.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah, they have goaltending, you know, obviously, you know, Kirill Kaprizov, you know, is a superstar and can be a difference maker in the playoffs.
He's a sneaky heart candidate there for a bit.
Yeah. He was, yeah.
Like, you know, if he took McDavid out of the equation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, Colorado is on a serious heater right now, and I believe they have a game in hand, or maybe even two games
actually,
in hand.
I have them right up here, so let me check. Colorado has two games in hand.
Two games in hand.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to say, I think Colorado might end up taking the division. Looking at everybody's schedules, they're pretty much similar. Like, everybody plays some good teams, some bad teams. I think Colorado might end up taking it. And then Dallas and Minnesota, it'll be the North Stars Cup.
You know what's really funny? So, because the Avalanche, because of their games in hand, they haven't clinched a playoff spot yet.
Interesting.
Like,
because Dallas and Minnesota have.
Yes, they have. They're the top, but they don't have the X next to them. That's wild. I think Colorado's going to take the division too. They are on a heater playing like Alex Galchenyuk in their regular lineup, and Dennis Malgin has turned into a legitimate like top six sort of like stopgap option for them. What they're doing with what they're able to do during the season by just keeping themselves afloat when literally all of their good players got hurt. Like we had a podcast segment in like December or November, we were like, can they survive?
Yeah.
We were like, maybe they'll sneak in and then hopefully get people healthy and then it'll be like, you know, lights out. Yeah. And yet here they are, we're like, yeah, they got the division locked up. We're right around.
It's going to happen.
They're doing it without a lot of their good players. But like I said before, like they're coming back. They're ready. Mm-hmm. And I think that if they get a couple games before, like they have seven games left in their season, You get maybe 3-4 games of those guys back in the lineup. We'll see. I'm not sure if they can do that cap-wise or not, but if they do, we'll see. The one thing I would have liked Colorado to do to just sort of make this a null and void argument is get another sort of, like, bigger name at the deadline.
Uh-huh.
Like, I do kind of like how they got Lars Eller. I got roasted by the by Dom specifically, by the analyst community for saying he was a sneaky little ad, and Dom's like, sneaky bad, and I'm just like, my favorite kind.
If he's on your bottom six, like,
he's great for faceoff. He's a playoff guy. He's big.
Yeah.
And kudos to Minnesota for being able to pull themselves back from the brink to go up on this. But I think Colorado, they're just so deep. They're so good. You're getting such great goaltending from Alex Georgiev, and even Pavel Francouz when he's healthy is giving you that great. Like it's just, I just think, and if you get everyone back, I think it's tough.
Yeah. And I even wonder, too, with some players, it'll be interesting to see in Toronto with Ryan O'Reilly when he comes back. It's like, I wonder if
could be tonight.
Getting hurt at certain times, it might act, depending on what the injury is and what you're able to do, you know, while you're waiting to get at full health. I wonder if it even becomes an advantage when you get into the playoffs where you're a little fresher than you would be if you played the full 82.
Well, with Ryan O'Reilly, like, I've seen him skate every time I'm at
the... Because it's a broken finger. He can still skate.
And apparently, the way that it was broken, and this might just be Kyle Dubas posturing, but he spoke about it at the GM meetings, and he said the way that it was broken was lucky for them because it was, like... A, it's easier to fix, and also B, like, if it was a playoff game, they would be able to find some medical mumbo-jumbo to keep make him play.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, he's like he has basically been able to just, like, work out for the last sort of, like, month, basically. Yeah. Get to know everyone at the facility. Sort of, keep his injured knee that they kept him out for most of the start of the regular, or that middle part of the regular season. Mm. It's great. Yeah, I think Colorado is going back to our Central Division conversation here. Colorado is definitely got the outside shot, or not the outside shot, the main shot.
Inside track.
Inside track. There we go.
The opposite.
So the opposite of what I said. Yes. 100%. All right. Speaking of Toronto, though, big topic on the airwaves these days is Michael Bunting.
Mm-hmm.
I've always liked Michael Bunting a lot. I enjoy any sort of, like, shorter guy. Who yaps a lot and scraps his way through life.
You stand a short king.
I do stand a short king. I know that triggers you, Ryan. So be careful. But
yeah, I'm fine with forwards.
Okay. Yeah. Some of your best friends are short forwards.
That's
okay.
Right.
It's funny because people have posted the clip of when Elliot Freeman was talking about it during the intermission. About how Michael Bunting led the league in penalty differential. Mm. And from the day that clip went, Michael Bunting has one of the worst sort of like ability to draw penalties.
His penalty-pedio has completely
plummeted. He got, like, manhandled by a linesman he used to play against in the AHL earlier this year. He got a 10-minute game misconduct. I wasn't actually at the game, but on Sunday, for playing keep away with a stick, like, he ate, like, four or five cross checks in the face, and then when the scrum was sort of breaking up, he just kept sort of, like, pushing a player's stick out of his hands, and he got the misconduct. So he's clearly not on the refs, I would say, like, a Christmas letter list,
if
we want to say.
Yes.
He is getting the short end of the stick here, it seems, just from a completely, you know, like, objective point of view, he is getting the short end of the stick.
Uh-huh.
And so is it good sort of that he this is sort of public knowledge now?
Yeah, I feel like it's maybe not, you know, and the playoffs will be interesting because it tends to be called differently.
He will have to, like, someone is going to have to, like, place Michael Bunting's head on a spike at center ice to get a penalty called against them.
Yeah. Now, it can work both ways because, I mean, he does play a physical, agitating style. And it'll be interesting to see, like, you know, I mean, refs, they never want to get shown up. We know that. That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's like the idea of it, you know, becoming an issue, I'm sure officials aren't too stoked about that. I do see the merit in sticking up for your guy and making sure, you know, and obviously Sheldon Keefe has, you know, talked to officials during games.
And he said that Dubas will be addressing this with the league, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, do you want to go that route? I guess, you know, if the Leafs think this is sort of like, it's gotten to that point where they don't have any other options, then it's like, okay, fair enough. But, you know, I mean, they're locked in to play Tampa in the first round. You know, last year it was a very, like, physical, nasty series, boiled over, you know, several times. You know, Bunting, he's going to have to figure out how to stay out of the box and hopefully, you know, draw some penalties. And as you mentioned, that's been more difficult lately than it had been in the first half. So that's a big challenge for him. And I think that's going to be sort of key because, you know, there are guys on Tampa that you can get under their skin and throw them off.
Nikita Kucherov is the biggest one in the league, I'd say.
The biggest one,
yeah.
And, you know, I mean, if you can take him off his game, then that's a huge advantage for you. So it's, you know, it's about threading that needle. And the fact that everybody knows about it probably makes it a little bit harder. But, I mean, Bunting's just going to have to kind of take his agitating to a new level in a sort of smarter way, if you know what mm-hmm. I mean. Like, he's going to have to be an even better agitator in the sense of not getting caught.
Yeah, and here, also, keep in mind, everything that we just said, we said about Brad Marchand like 2-3 years ago. Like, literally everything. Uh-huh. Now, here's what I don't like when it comes to discussing referees, is that we have to take into account that they are actively terrible. And
yet the best we have.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, that just shows the sorry state that we're in. But and the reason why I say that, it's not just to get a shot at the rest, but it's because I think about it. It's like, okay, it's Toronto and Tampa again. And I go, you brought up a good point too, where you say like refs don't like to get shown up. Mm. And you're right. And I think a big reason why, you know, Bunting's penalty drawing went down so big, so dramatically, mm. is because they were getting shown up. He was showing them up, and they don't like that. So now yep. he's going to have to get, you know, like brutally murdered in front of 20,000 people to actually get a penalty called against them. Yeah. But then I also think back to, because and refs don't like to get shown up again. They don't like to, like they say they don't like to be the center of conversation, even right. though they do that to themselves all the time. Because like I said, they are terrible. But I look at the last year's series, and what was the biggest sort of, again, same opponents, right? Same. It's going to be the same sort of home ice too, right? Yeah. Like it's going to be exactly the same. Like Game 7, if it gets to that, which it inevitably will, yeah. Is going to be at Scotiabank Arena. And what happened is the Leafs tied a game in Game 7, and it was negated by what everyone can agree is a ridiculous penalty call, which was the pick by Justin Hall that then took that goal off the board. And I think, are refs going to be more, because in a normal world, I think, based on how all of those similarities are, refs might be going like, oh, well, people will be pointing at that. So we'll call the Leafs a little, we'll call the Leafs a little like softer, you know, like in this, just so people don't sort of accuse us of being bad at our jobs, even though, like I've said before, we are. And so it's going to be, but then I look at it and I go like, well, they haven't given the Leafs any breaks. It literally took them until middle to end of March for them to get their first 5-on-3. Of the year. They were the only team not to do that.
Interesting.
And so it's difficult. I think this goes back to Bunting in the sense that he plays a style that I think right now everyone in the playoffs does.
Right.
Like we've seen videos of Brad Marchand literally throwing five free punches in the face of Henrik Sedin.
Yeah.
I think it was Henrik. It could have been Daniel. You know, like every year we've seen transgression after brutal transgression go unpunished. Yeah. And so it's going to be tough. Like I think right now it's probably a good thing that it's public knowledge, because at least now the refs, the I don't want to be showing up, the their sort of insecurity, their pettiness, has sort of shifted to another sense, where now that is the conversation, how the refs are targeting Michael Bunting. So they'll go, oh, we don't want people to criticize us now. So right. we'll go back the other way. We shall see. If you take anything from that, it's state officiating is not great. But we digress. All right, rapid fire, Ryan.
Let's do it.
It is me, and we talked, I think it was 2 weeks ago, about, you know, the dumbest injuries that we had, and I shared the story of my 2K outburst that ruptured my eardrum on Twitter last night, because there was a great prompt for it. And so I was thinking, like, so what is the video game? Because you're more of an old school video game guy.
Yes.
What is the video game that made you close enough to breaking a controller or an eardrum, if you will?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I feel like there was a lot of, and it was funny, I was telling this to my kids the other day, that like with the old Nintendo, like the original Nintendo, if something didn't go my way, I would blame the game's judgment, which was like this thing where it's like clearly like the game had, you know, like I didn't even know about algorithms back then or anything, but there was clearly something in that like microchip that made judgment calls.
Oh, honey, that's legit. I shot 2.6% while leading the league in shots in my NHL Be a Pro in my most recent season. The game was prejudiced against me.
Yes, exactly. So there's something called judgment in Nintendo games that I will maintain. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember which ones would have been the worst for that. Because, I mean, you know, you had like RBI Baseball and like, I'm trying to think of like, you know, like was it like Mega Man or like Simon's Quest was very frustrating, which was the second Castlevania game.
Oh, yeah, okay, I know.
And it was more of a, not really a sandbox because it was still scrolling, but it's like you didn't just have levels.
It was like a choose your own adventure kind of game.
A little bit. You had to find different parts of like Dracula's nail and his eyeball and everything. And there was one jump that was just like impossible.
Yeah.
That and the Ninja Turtles Nintendo game where I'm pretty sure I heard that there was a level that they just screwed up and you literally couldn't beat it.
Yeah.
So those were the most frustrating where it's like, I don't know what else to do here. So those would be, I would say that, yeah. Simon's Quest and Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, there was, as a kid, even, when I, when my parents made me skip two birthdays to save up for a Nintendo SP, a Game Boy SP.
Gotcha.
It was red, and then it was stolen from the Yorkdale Mall, which broke my heart. But I played Yoshi's Island.
Okay.
And that game was so hard. Like, it was, and I would be losing it under my covers after my parents told me to go to bed.
Yeah.
I'd be, like, freaking out at this game. Another one, too, it's Batman Arkham Origins. So it's not the, like, I'm currently replaying the Arkham games just because, you know, I felt like it, and they're remastered, and, you know, whenever I have free time, you know, it's fun, and it distracts me from the world. And Arkham Origins is sort of like the black sheep of the games because Rocksteady Studios, they made Arkham Asylum, which then caused people to realize, oh, you can make superhero games. This is great. Superhero games don't suck. This is great. Then they did Arkham City, which in my opinion is the best one.
Okay.
It's amazing. And then they took like a 6 or 7 year break to put all of their effort and money and everything for the next gen console into Arkham Knight. So during that period, they contracted out the license to WB Games Montreal to build a prequel game called Batman Arkham Origins. And it had different sort of voice cast and like a bit of a different character design. It's like, it is canon, but it's you could get away with saying it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a good argument that it's still a very game, very enjoyable. There's this one level, one boss fight where you have to fight Deathstroke.
Mm-hmm.
You know who Deathstroke is?
Like, yes.
Yeah.
He's the one that Deadpool is based on.
Yes, he's the one that Marvel stole.
Yeah.
And so he's got like the half sort of face.
Yeah.
And you're fighting him. And the whole thing is that you and him, like this is the first time where you and him are on a level playing field for combat. It's the first, it's like the only level they didn't just reskin from the other games, basically. And you have to be so precise with your counters or else he will like legitimately just run you into the ground. And I cannot tell you. I spent an entire winter break, I think, in grade 10, grade 9, one of those, just losing. Like playing the same fight all... I was losing my mind playing the same fight all day. And I'd make, like, a little... Like, I'd be able to punch him in the face, but then he'd just turn around with the staff and just absolutely, like, wallop me, and I'd lose, and I'd be like, what is that? It'd be so precise. So that's one that made me lose my mind. It was terrible. What is a game... we're sticking on the video games here. Is that what is a game that, like, you know, okay, you know that Simpsons episode where, you know, like, I think it, what was it called? Like Blood Rain or something?
Bone Storm,
yes. Yeah. What was your version of Bone Storm from your childhood?
Okay, so.
The game that everyone, the kid at you know, at school are like, you gotta get Bone Storm, man.
Yeah. I would say it was like Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
Yeah.
To the extent that like me and my brother like got a PlayStation just to play Vice City. Because I had been playing it at a friend's house and then we played it like at our like cousins. It's like, we have to get this. We just have to get this. And the funny thing was like when we first got it, we didn't have like a memory card.
So you had to just keep playing it?
We literally left it on.
Like, oh, I thought overnight. You just had to keep wow.
No, we just left it on overnight until we got a memory card so we could, like, save it. But that was the game where it's like, I need this in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, like, a complete kind of, like, it's super fun. You know, you can do a lot of stuff. But, like, the radio stations were great. And just the sense of humor was hilarious to me. So, yeah, that was the one where it's like, we have to get this. I was not a child, but it was...
How old were you in that?
I was a teenager.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was, like...
Probably late. Actually, you know what? Yeah, like late teens. Like I might have even been like in university.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my parents didn't let me have a game system throughout growing up. They made me read and do ridiculous. And I haven't forgiven them since.
Fair.
So I didn't, so like around the time all my friends were playing like Call of Duty and all that in middle school, I just kind of had to sit and watch when I was over there. I'd be like, "Great shot, guys!" Like,
they wouldn't even let you play somebody else's.
No. Like I would step in, but like they would, but I would like go home and like we would all go home and then they continue playing online, and I'd be at home being like, "Well, this book is great."
Right.
Again, we'll never forgive you. But anyway, So, but as a kid, if you didn't have Pokemon on your Game Boy, like, you were ostracized.
Right.
You were a leper in that. And the thing about that is, like, you know, everyone would compare, but you could link up. You would buy cables, and you would link up. You could trade back and forth. And there were certain Pokemon that wouldn't evolve unless you traded them. So we would do paper transactions. I would be like, well, my like Gengar won't evolve until I trade him. So I'm gonna trade him to you, and then you trade him right back to me, so he can evolve. So that was huge. And then I guess sort of towards my high school career, it was GTA 5.
Gotcha.
Where, you know, like, and this is on the Xbox 360. It has spanned like three consoles at this point now. GTA, but it was GTA 5 where it was. Like, everyone, you had to, if you wanted to be able to, like, have a conversation with people at school, you had to have GTA 5. And my final one, so I haven't seen the first two episodes of Succession Season 4.
Okay.
I blame you because you are my boss.
Yes.
So that's it. But for the other seasons, what is your favorite Succession insult?
Wow, I don't think that's like even like something I can say on the podcast.
Well, like I have one that's actually not explicit, but you can you can sort of bleep if you need to.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Like, I don't remember the dialogue that well.
Is there there's none season. That stuck out? Not in
anytime,
any of them.
I would say like any time that like somebody like dresses down Kendall is always the funniest because his reactions are the best.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can't think of anything specific, but it certainly does have
really
sparkling dialogue.
See, I got mine, and still rings true, is, you know, when in first episode of season 3, when all the kids gather at Kendall's ex-wife's apartment or whatever, because Kendall just tried to launch a siege against his dad, you know, as they always do, and he's trying to get them all on board, and he goes first with Connor, and Connor says no, and Kendall just immediately flips a switch. He's like, all right, get out. You're not wanted. And then just, it's a part, I don't even think he's on camera when he says it, but Roman's just like he hasn't heard that enough in his life already, you know, as he's walking away. And I'm like, oh man, that is cuts to the heart. That is good. That is my favorite one. Or I think it's when Logan, keep in mind, these are all spoilers, but when they're about to do a huge merger, and it's the investment, it's the investors or the shareholders meeting,
right.
And Logan ends up having a medical condition, if you will, that is impairing his judgment.
Yep.
And so he keeps having to go to the bathroom, and Tom is taking him, and Greg goes, oh, you guys are going to the bathroom, whatever? Like, and Logan just looks at him and goes, what the F business is it of yours? Like, it's so... what a great show, I love it. But
it
the Connor one is great. And it's disappointing that you do not remember every line of dialogue in that show, Ryan.
It's true.
But on that note, I will give Ryan 2 weeks now until my time until my time is back on Rapid Fire to memorize the entire Succession script from episode 1 and then relay his favorite parts to me. That'd be great. And on that note, podcast is over. If you'd like to listen to this one or any of the past ones or any of the THN podcasts, go to thehockeynews.com/podcasts where all our archives are. Or you can find them on any podcatcher. They're all on their own individual streams. Ryan, anything you want to leave the listeners with before we head out?
Just be good.
Good.
Be good, people.
We will see you next week.